Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge. Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Past Live podcast. You're joined by me, your host, Uncle Boo Me, and today I'm joined by two of my past lives to recall another of my past life, which was the past life in which I played for Romania against Argentina in the 2011 World Cup of rugby, not cricket. And joining me as ever, one of the past life that's always with me.
My name is Ramil Gaisin. I am your 10th life and the one which would often float in the air as I kicked an egg around.
And joining me, returning, is another past life.
I don't have a joke lined up for this. I'm just trying not to cry laughing. Hello.
You're holding your eyes like the thing in Pan's Labyrinth.
Don't you start.
Covering your, like Guillermo del Toro's 2008 opus, Pan's Labyrinth.
I have a very, very loud laugh, and if I'd actually given in and laughed, it would have just drowned you.
It's fine, we can master the recording. It's all right.
So, when you start talking about Pan's Labyrinth, is that what it's called?
Yes. Pan's Labyrinth, yeah.
Can you do as... Just briefly, only no more than 15 minutes. Just talk about the plot of that for me, please.
Okay, Pan's Labyrinth is set during the Spanish Second War, Civil War rather, Spanish Civil War. It is a kind of like new realist fantasy by Guillermo del Toro. It's often considered as like his finest film, even he went on to win the Oscar for The Shape of Water. Like Mark Kermode listed it as his favourite film of the last 20 years, and it was his one from post-2000s.
It's really good, isn't it? It's good.
Yeah. People think of it as like there's going to be this high fantasy thing, but actually a lot of the film is just a Spanish girl in the past being sad.
Yeah, that's mostly it.
Yeah, it's mostly just about this Spanish girl who's having a really hard time because of like her life and stuff, and you know, like living in a war, and then she meets this mad creature that's got hands on its eyes and it kind of holds them over its face, and she steals food from it and it gets angry at her. And William's left the conversation. Cool, okay. That's a bit, but I'm not letting him back in. I'm not letting him back in. He's done. He's cooked his chips there.
He's not allowed on this podcast.
He's trying to add himself again. I'm not having him. How are you, Rhiannon? We should probably actually introduce you.
I think I've gone insane.
We're 2 minutes in and we've already given up on the format of the podcast. It's like listening to Blood and Mud.
You haven't given up on the format of the podcast, you've just accelerated your commitment to it.
That's it, we've gone all in very, very quickly. We've cut out the middleman.
Yeah, otherwise fine. Yeah. I feel like I've lost my grasp on reality, which was tenuous to begin with. Previously,
you lost your grasp on reality. Lost your grasp on reality, and now you are appearing in rooms full of food with men with hands on their eyes.
Yes, that's going to sound really weird to anyone who hasn't seen Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, should we just do a Pan's Labyrinth retrospective podcast instead? Because
you could have warned me and then I could have rewatched it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. It's probably about maybe 2 or 3 years. Yeah, shall I re-add the other one?
I mean, I think it would be nice.
Okay.
If only I can have someone to share horrified reactions with.
I just had a text from saying, okay, I'm sorry.
You're less alone. Thank you again. For that, well.
Here he is. Welcome back. This is the worst start, or possibly the best start, depending on your point of view. But personally, I think the worst, as the person trying to be the professional in the room.
What? Who are you kidding?
I feel it's my job. I'm also very bad at it.
Let me take over. I'd be much less
Oh, please do. Please do.
Go on,
Rhiannon. Redo this whole intro and everything.
Oh, shit. I don't even know because the name of the podcast is too long and I know you joke about it. I'm not sure I remember what all the words
going. Make up your own name for it.
Well, no, because it's now the Rhiannon Garth Jones Rugby World Cup retrospective. Just even longer. We found a way.
From the top then, Rhiannon.
Right, listeners, this is the Squid Rugby Nonsense retrospective podcast thing about the 2011 World Cup. I am joined by the two idiot brothers, Robbie and Will Owen, and their incessant jokes. And we're going to talk about Argentina versus Romania, the full game, which was fucking great. Yeah, we are not going to talk about Pads Labyrinth or any other shite that the two of you bring up. We're going to talk about the game. Let's go.
Okay,
that was to the point. That was good. That was good. Do you want to do this every week?
I mean,
I was going to ask that firstly, because for the last sort of five episodes, I have probably in all the episodes consecutively made jokes about not wanting to do a podcast with Robbie anymore. So
I haven't noticed. I mean, you just quit the podcast recording. I'm not sure how much more.
I'm going to need to put some sort of foot down here, some sort of boot. I think it's time we actually talk about rugby. Argentina, right? They played a game of rugby like 9 years ago against Romania.
Why are we talking about this? I just realised what a stupid idea this podcast was.
It was the thing, so after we had Blaine Scully on, he started explaining how hilarious the concept for the podcast was.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'd realised it until an icon of American rugby explained to me, like, what a stupid idea this is.
And yeah,
I think it's hilarious.
And he listens to it.
Yeah. Legend.
Yeah. I thought this is just, like, a really interesting thing. Everyone wants to hear people talk about a tournament from 9 years ago, don't they? Everyone loves that.
Because you're a nerd.
Can confirm. You are a nerd.
I'm a nerd. I'm not using it as an insult. I'm just saying, you know, you've got your niche.
I'm using it as an insult. You're a nerd.
Yes.
It's like being back in school. Are you gonna give me a wedgie as well?
Give me a lunch money.
Are you gonna shove me in my locker? Put my head down the toilet.
I mean, you should have gone to my school or my brother's school where they put people in wheelie bins and rolled them down the hill.
I have two questions. Firstly, what the hell? They rolled you down the wheelie bin. Secondly, Robbie, did someone really put your head in the toilet?
No, it's a thing that happens in American films. Though I should have gone to your school because then a different group of kids would have got to bully me. Would have been a variety.
Yeah. My mother put people in wheelie bins all the time and roll them down the hill. Very steep holes.
Was it against their will?
Yes.
Because it's quite like a... Okay. No, because that could sound like a fun activity you do at Scouts. Like, they put you in a wheelie bin and roll you down a grassy hill.
No.
We're so far off topic. Like, no easy way back as well. Like, there's no... I can't see a segue in mind. I can't... I'd have to get in one of those bins and, like, roll down Mount Everest to get eventually to the topic in hand.
Here's a segue. Sean Edwards would have used putting someone in a wheelie bin and rolling them off a hill as a punishment for some of the Romanian defenders in this game.
Oh, cool. Okay, that works.
You're a savior,
that works.
Rhiannon.
Sean Edwards, of course, took over as Romania's defense coach.
Yeah.
He really didn't, and that shows. So, Romania against who are they? Argentina. Right?
Yeah.
43-8 points of rugby. Right? Argentina scored loads of tries. They scored 6 tries. Romania scored 1 try. Argentina scored 5 conversion goals. Romania scored 0 conversion goals. The one penalty by Argentina, 67% kick success rate, 731 metres made by Argentina to 233 by Romania, 19 kicks from hand from either side. Are we done now? We talked about rugby.
I weirdly think that I enjoyed the Uncle Boone Me bit more.
Please, why would you do that to me?
It's funny you should bring up Uncle Boone Me, because I've got some more thoughts on that film.
Okay, so... So
there's a long bit at the end where he just goes to a cave and he just sort of sits in a cave.
Should we have a look
friends,
at the Argentina team to start with?
Yeah, let's.
Sure. So they had Lucas Gonzalez and Maracino at fullback, who had recently been at Leicester Tigers, with Gonzalo Camacho and Horacio Aguja on the wings.
Aguja also of Leicester Tigers, and Camacho went on to play for the Tigers for a bit, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Rhiannon, you hate wingers. Anything you got to say about that?
Go on.
Okay, cool. Marcelo Bosch, Martin Rodriguez have moved from fullback to the centres. Our previous dick of the day, yeah, which was pretty much unanimous in that previous episode.
And yeah, the only exception was Sam gave Mario Ledesma dick of the day for giving Rodriguez so much to do.
Trusting him, yeah.
Which is, yeah, a fair point. And I think, actually, there's something to be said for Santiago Falan, the coach at the time, giving him even more to do by moving him into 12.
Yeah. That was a dubious and selection, wasn't it?
Well, this guy played like an idiot last time. Let's give him even more responsibility by moving our 12 into 10. You know, like, Santi Fernandez, I thought, was a fantastic player, but yeah, was naturally an inside centre.
Yeah, agree.
And then let's put this just twat, yeah, into 12. It's fine, he speaks Spanish. And then, by the way, he speaks Spanish, I mean, so he can't hear that, rather than, I think everyone who speaks Spanish is a twat.
Nobody who speaks Spanish can hear this podcast.
That is true. Yeah. It's true. It comes at, like, a different frequency, so all the cast of Pan's Labyrinth can't hear this podcast.
Yeah. I heard that, who's a Spanish person? Shakira tried to listen, and she just couldn't. It was because her friend Carly Rae Jepsen got in touch.
She heard this whisper saying, you can listen to the podcast, you can listen to the podcast, and then she tried to listen to it and she was like, oh mate, my hips can lie after all.
I knew you were going to do that.
Also, she's not Spanish, she's Colombian. She speaks Spanish.
That's what I meant. Yeah,
I'm assuming she speaks Spanish. Yikes. Oh, that's why are we doing this?
Yeah, that's
why are we doing this?
Let's move on.
Right.
So, Martin Rodriguez played.
Yes.
And, should we talk about good stuff he did or bad stuff he did?
Let's start with the. I mean, is there good stuff?
Yes, he did that incredible pass to Leguizamon, which is one of the best passes I've ever seen. It's the one good thing Rodriguez has done in his career.
I remembered that as being in the lead up to Leguizamon's try. I remember that as being an incredible pass,
yeah,
and him just threading it over properly. But I also need to point out, this game was played at like 3 in the morning, UK time.
Yeah.
So I was very tired watching that, and that's kind of my abiding memory, is being slightly sleepy, yet being woken up by watching Ambrosino be brilliant.
Yeah.
And then seeing Rodriguez's pass in real time, clearly I had a moment where, like, for a second I just blitzed out. I just kind of fell off a bit.
Yeah.
Because it hits a Romanian and is very lucky to land in Leguizamon's hands. And if you look at that pass carefully, he's not trying to throw it there. He's trying to throw it like for Leguizamon to drift onto rather than to where he goes through the gap. And it's a complete fluke that he actually throws incredible pass.
Oh, you've ruined it.
So one thing about him you have immediately shit on.
Yeah. Let him have his moment of glory.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To be fair, it's the first time that Martin Rodriguez has ever passed a ball as well.
I know.
I
yeah,
mean,
so fair play to him for that.
About the result, you know, for his first time.
Yeah.
He throws another pass in the second half where two players run like what they'd call X-factor lines when I was under 16s, where they kind of like dissect each other. They run either side of him.
Right.
And his idea is he selects one or the other. Instead, he goes to just drop the pass off to someone else, and you can't see in shot who it is, and just throws it to one of the Romanians, to, I think it's Dimofte.
Yes.
Who Dimofte then makes a clean break, and it leads to possibly the greatest passage of rugby you'll ever see.
Yeah. The issue was, Dimofte is really slow.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. A decently fast 10 would have finished that. I know it was at 80 yards. He had to go a long way, but then who did he offload to? Was it one of the wingers?
It was Daniel Carpo. Daniel Carpo, who then gives it on to Kazan, the winger.
Yeah, and then it's mad. Then Lobbe gets it back on the inside.
Kazan then gives it to Lobbe. Yeah, who tries to offload, hits a Romanian player. Then is about to go out of play before Imhoff then grubbers it, like hacks it back in field, regathers it, picks it up. And as the Romanians are all coming up to smash him into touch, kind of offloads it infield.
Yeah, that was incredible.
To Fessia, the replacement flanker, who goes all the way, having dummied inside to, I think it's Fernandez. It's one of the Argentine backs. Or it might be Amorosino, is tracking with him. It's incredible. It's just the most mad shit passage of play.
In my notes of this bit, I wrote, will you make your fucking mind up? I rewatched it like 3 times to try and work out what exactly was going on. And in the end, I was like, it's just brilliant. And I'm not going to try and analyse this.
No one wants the ball. Yeah.
Yeah, it's both teams Argentinaring, which is to say offloading and imploding.
I think, in fairness, throughout this game, the entire Argentinian team, definitely the back line, was just having so much fun that they almost can't be held responsible for their behaviour and mistakes. Because it was just hilarious. There's a point where, and we'll probably talk about this more seriously later, but like the Romanian defence is just is so far back that I think Hernandez, like, it looks like he goes to dummy. And then he realises that he's got, like, at least 10 metres of space, and so does everyone behind him. So it, I think actually what he wasn't dummying. I think he was just going to pass, and then he realised. So he keeps on the ball and keeps running, and then the Romanian defence just keeps running back. So he's like, I'm just going to throw the pass then, I guess, because I don't know what else to do at this time. And it looks, the first time you watch it, you're like, oh, what a like, nice but pointless dummy. And then you're like, oh, no, wait, he was just really confused.
It is the Romanian defence almost feels like a rugby league defence in that they're 5 metres behind the breakdown at all times.
Yeah, except in no way like a rugby league defence in the other sense of doing anything at all related to
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There's just, yeah, so I think this whole game is like one of the perfect World Cup games in the sense of you could go to the pub with people who've never seen rugby in their lives.
Yeah.
And sit down and be chatting and having a drink and kind of watching the rugby, but not like, that's not the whole thing that you're there for. And you could basically say to your mates, you can't throw the ball forward. People deliberately run into other people. Just watch it. And they would get what was happening in this game and they would enjoy it. And there's like loads and loads of parts of that. But I think a large part of it is that in the first half, at least, the Romanian defence is just so optional.
Yeah,
and it's really easy to like understand the basic sort of premise of attack and defense in rugby.
Absolutely,
it's less a rugby league defense and more a touch rugby defense. I think
it's not even a rugby defense, is it? It's just like 15 people in a queue.
It's like people who have been told what they're supposed to do, but have never actually done it.
Yeah.
So they're sort of like, oh, this is the bit where we drift, right? And then they're like, oh, we just left a massive 15-meter gap in the middle of the
It's kind of got that, like, when you watch 1970s rugby and they don't put any pressure at all, they just kind of walk up slowly. Only Romania aren't really actually walking up, they just kind of, the ball comes out and they take like one step.
They're walking sideways.
Exactly.
I found whenever Lucas San Martino got the ball, he kind of just knew, like, well, this defence isn't very good, and this will just be the way we exploit it. And just every time he found a different way to go around it. There was a couple of times he offloaded, a couple of times he just passed it straight off. There was once where he, like, chipped it over and did this offload to Leguizamon. Like, every single time he was just, you could just tell he was just very quickly going, oh, yeah, this is rubbish defence. Let's just go around it, shall we?
Every time he got the ball, he must have been like, surely this time they will. Okay, there we go. That's awesome. Yeah. The only exception
to the Romanian defence was when they were actually on their own try line, at which point their defence was suddenly brilliant.
Yeah. What they were doing. I think maybe that was their whole thing. They were like, just fuck it, we'll learn how to defend the try line.
When you're on your try line, you just need to hit the thing in front of you. You don't need to think about it. There's no drifting and there's no, you know, setting people in the back line or any of that backfield. Yeah. Like, that's it. You're just like, hit him, hit him, hit him. And suddenly they had just completely impenetrable wall once you got to the back line. Well, back to the actual try line, rather. But any further out, and they were leaking tries left, front and centre, so all of Argentina's tries looked spectacular because they were only being stopped when they got to the try line.
Exactly like that 70s thing of you watch tries sort of from the golden days and you're like, any functional defence would make this very different, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
A minimal level of functional defence.
Yeah.
Doesn't even when they made a break from like 40 yards out and the scorer under the post, you think, oh, we didn't think about that. What do we do in that situation?
Hold on.
Run backwards.
Wait, no, but we're really good at defending on our try line. And in order to score a try, they've got to go over our try line. But we're good at defending. But how? But there's some part of the puzzle missing here. I can't quite put it together.
I felt they improved slightly in the second half in that sense. Marius Tinku, who played the whole game this time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, having learned from the mistakes of the previous game.
Yeah.
The main takeaway of which was don't take Mario's tinker off.
Yeah.
And then the second tinkle, half, tinkle. But it was like, don't tinker. Oh, I've lost
no it. Sign of Bogdan Suman today.
Bogdan Suman.
Yes, there were points in the second half where like the game was very clearly gone from Romania and Tinku was still kind of trying to, no, I am not acknowledging the point from me. You're going to make another terrible pun.
I am.
And Tinku was still like really trying to organise his pack to do actual sort of functional defensive things.
Yeah.
Better in the second half if he hit my thing.
For the benefit of the listener, I just raised my hand as though I was asking a question in class. And now that the teacher
my
stopped speaking,
I'll do it. In my hands.
Yeah. Do you think because he didn't come on, Bogdan is going to sue Man, who is the coach?
Do you want both of us to leave the call this time?
Please, please. Think about what a good idea that'll be. Because I'm still recording.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, we're also
I don't know if any of you have ever seen the Greek film Dogtooth. Actually, there's. I can make this relevant. I can make this relevant. So. The film Dogtooth is actually, I don't want to explain the plot, but because it's kind of, it's the, you know when people talk about like, oh, that really, really weird European film, you know, and it's like about someone whose parents start a sex cult with their children.
I would just like to say.
That's what Dogtooth is.
After the last episode, you were on Rhiannon. Thank you for accepting to come back on because that wasn't enjoyable.
So
I think I sort of blocked it out, you know, because now that I'm sat here, it's all coming back to me.
So, okay, so the thing about Dogtooth, right, is there's a lot of it is about these kids, like, finding a fetish. And I think that's what this game was.
Will's head is not entirely on the table.
That's what this game was for me, because I've developed, like, a real thing after... I think this game was the start of it for just Argentine wingers. And I think this game was the moment it all clicked for me, was watching Ambrosino be magnificent and watching Camacho and Agüero be so robust. Because those are the two types of winger and back three player that Argentina make. Are either these players with just immense balance in the mould of Ambrosino or Delgui or Imhoff, who are phenomenal and great finishers and just have this incredible step and balance to them. Or they're players like Agüero and Camacho, and then like Uruguay at the minute currently have Nicolás Freitas, who's exactly the same kind of player from slightly, you know, further out in South America, who are so, as I say, robust.
Same place according to you.
Really. And are very just good under the high ball. And like some of the Camacho was gathering high balls in that first half.
Yeah.
You could tell he was about to be on Leicester Tigers' radar the way he was chasing kicks.
Yeah, yeah. And while neither of the starting wingers scored tries or anything, like they were both so good at getting them on the front foot. And like the thing is, I feel like Argentina were just very sensible with their approach in this game. And I feel like their plan was always go forward first and then get points, you know?
Yeah.
And they never got carried away. They were very patient with it. Even though, as I say, like you were saying earlier, Ian, like they were a bit slow in the second half to getting any tries. But like they were very patient in their attack. And I think that that's very commendable.
Yeah. And I think surprisingly relevant point there from Robbie, which was that this game was also...
I do this for a living.
Started with Dogtooth.
Come on. That like all the sort of pre-match talk was about, well, lots of things, but there was lots of talk about, you know, like Argentina's like focus on the forwards and the pack, and this was going to be a very kind of ugly purist sort of game. And then Argentina came out and they were like, oh, hello gentlemen, we have a new program. Let us introduce you to dynamic offloading forwards and a party back three.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, there, it was really clear that this kind of game, after that horrific first full game, was sort of like the public transition of Argentina from the sort of 2007 version to like what we've had since, basically.
Degrees
of goodness, and that like style of forward, the way they were using their pack, particularly, is like. Very, yeah, you know, you would look at that now and go like, well, obviously it wouldn't work against a modern defence because Romanian defence was terrible, but that is basically what you want in a modern forward.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That kind of style of like, they can be really physical, they can just smush you as they try and like push over the line, but also really dynamic, really athletic, really like clever, looking for space as well as compact. And that was a really cool thing to see, I think.
Yeah.
As well as the back three, who were obviously delightful.
And I think the sheer run-up they were giving the back, the forward rather, was really useful. Like, they were coming onto the ball at such pace, and they weren't just using it to gather momentum in the way like a Billy Vunipola or someone does. They were looking for space and they were looking for gaps. And they were, because they were coming on with such time and the remaining defence were putting no pressure on them whatsoever.
I mean,
they
were looking for gaps or selecting gaps, I would say.
Yeah. It's like looking for grass in a field. Yeah. But yeah, they were able to just select the which huge hole between Romanian players they wanted to run through.
Yeah.
Do I want to approach the try?
While Vigajo and Fernandez, the halfbacks, neither of them were the most efficient passers of the ball, but they both just had so much time on the ball and so much protection that they could just pick their runners so superbly, and both had really good games.
Yeah, because there were points where actually you would sort of look at it, and this goes back to my thing of like a sort of rugby newbie could watch this, and you can see how important like fast tempo is, especially like from the ruck. Because it was just so clear a lot of the time that Argentina were way, way too fast for Romania. So they were getting away with mistakes because they just still had so much time on the ball. And you could, the reverse of that, you could also see quite often where it's like, oh, you've just gone too fast for yourselves there.
Yeah.
Just take a step back. Slow it down for 1 second.
Yeah.
Romania accidentally remembered how to tackle here. But it was, there was just so much stuff like that that was just so incredibly clear, and it's rare, I think, that you get in a game of rugby, in a high-profile game of rugby, something where it is just, it's so very obvious to someone who doesn't watch a game, like how all those things kind of interlink and function to do it. And that's just really interesting.
I think on that, there's something happening at virtually every moment as well. Like, you have breaks being made, you have tries being scored, very, you know, 7 tries scored over the course of the game. It's a space of about 1 every 10 minutes. You have, you know, points, and the penalties, because it is, and we have, of course, brought you on as our Steve Walsh correspondent. Steve lets a lot go. So the penalties that he gives are really clear cut, so you can explain them very obviously to a new fan.
And a lot of the so-called backwards knock-ons were dubious.
Like, he would let anything go in this game, both teams.
Including yet another spear tackle. Thank you, Steve Walsh.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a moment in which there's a tackle that... it's one of the Romanians, isn't it? I think it's... I wrote it down. I think it's Kazan, the winger.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah. So they're picked up and dropped, and it would be identical to the Sam Warburton one, but for the fact that the falling player's elbow goes out a bit and hits the ground first. Otherwise, it'd be exactly the same. And it's given us just a penalty, and the commentator's saying, oh, that's quite harsh, you know, I don't think there's any intent in that.
Yes! Oh, we shouldn't get sidetracked by that. Other things I noticed about Steve Walsh is
his beautiful eyes.
Always, and his hair. He was blowing his whistle like an angry car horn at times. You know, like the kind of sort of make America great again, like that just really sort of enraged truck car horn. So that's how he used his whistle at times, and I really enjoyed that scene.
He was honking his whistle.
Yes.
Basically. Yeah.
I don't know why, because I think every time I noticed him doing it, it was like, the action has stopped, Steve. They're all listening to you. Like, it's just bonus attention that you're seeking. Yeah. Obviously, because it's Steve.
There's a moment where one of the Argentiners is going off for blood towards the end of the game. And Steve Walsh asks, oh, where is he then? If he's going, is he already off? Is he still on? And the player's currently on the big screen. You can currently see him on the TV feed being taken off. And Steve Walsh is asking where he is, like he isn't watching the big screen at all times. Like, every stoppage, he isn't looking up to check for himself.
He's already checked the big screen, realised it's not him, and is therefore no longer interested.
That's it. Yeah. Or he looked at him and went, why am I now a massive fat Argentine?
Who is this idiot? What are you talking to me about?
Don't say that again. Steve Walsh is incapable of not being handsome.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think top of my notes is another Steve Walsh game. And a big
The very top of my notes just says Steve. because I know, obviously I'd clocked that last time we had you on, Rhiannon, it was a Steve Walsh game as well. Should we just do every Steve Walsh game? We'll just get you on.
I am only available for Steve Walsh games. I want to be not interested in any other referee.
Yeah.
I think Steve is absolutely the way forward. There's another point as well I've got written down where the commentator says, he starts talking about how controversial Steve Walsh is. Then a minute later he says, Steve Walsh though, doing everything expected of him in this game. Which, I mean, do you just mean he's blown his whistle? And also, like, do you mean Steve Walsh particularly? Because I think people will half expect Steve Walsh to do shots during a game. And he hasn't done that today.
And if you mean what the referee is expected to do, still questionable, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Penalise a knock-on.
Yeah.
In every sense, questionable.
Yeah. I quite like Bob Simmons, though, who's the commentator on this game. At the time, I remember I always used to think he was a bit useless because he didn't offer any, like, sort of outside kind of, like, in-depth analysis or anything. But he does just very simply commentate on the game and tell you what's happening
from an unbiased sense.
My favourite Bob Simmons moment ever was when Cardiff Blues played against Toulon several years ago when the Blues weren't in the Arms Park or wherever
Gareth
it was.
Davis. Gareth Davis. Astromenic Gareth Davis.
Yeah. And Johnny Wilkinson has a ball and makes like a bit of a half break playing for Toulon. And Bob Simmons goes, Johnny Wilkinson, the man they call Johnny Wilkinson.
The similar moment, of course, and I know you remember this as well, is a game where Edinburgh are playing in about the 2009 Heineken Cup, where Mike Blair makes... No, it's Mike Blair's... What was Mike Blair's brother called?
David.
David, thank you. Yes, David Blair makes a clean break, and he shouts, it's David Blair, the man they call Tony! And that always stuck with me.
Yeah.
That always stuck with me. I assume it's because he's a really big fan of the band Tony, Tony, Tony.
Both of these things are going to stick with me now. This is going to be Bob Simmons.
Bob Simmons is also great because he is, A, the foundation of a comedy character that I did for a bit when I was in uni, who was a sports commentator called Jobel Steinfeld. And I just improvised the name once. And it had to stick because people would say, oh, is that like Jobel Steinfeld? But really, it just came from the fact that he's one of the very few impressions I can do.
Yeah.
And I can do a passable Bob Simmons. I can do Bob Simmons, Michael Caine, and Frank Sidebottom. And that's it. And KK Slider.
KK Slider. Well, I have to get you to sing us out at the end of this podcast. I can do Bob Simmons and Ernie from Sesame Street.
Oh, your Ernie's good. Your Ernie's. Yeah. Give us some Ernie. Hold on. Hey, Bert. No, my name is not Bert. My name is Bob Simmons. It's Ernie.
Hey, Bob. What do you think of this game?
Well, I think this is a proper thriller of a test match, and I think there are some really interesting things going forward to next week.
Hey, did you say you could do an impression of Bob Simmons?
I've never watched Sesame Street.
No,
I think
it is interesting that you should bring up Sesame Street. Because, mate, Michael Caine. That isn't a very good Michael Caine. I can do a better Michael Caine.
I have heard you do a better Michael Caine, but that was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I haven't done Frank Sidebottom in quite a long time, so I'm worried about doing it.
I can do a Sidebottom.
For the record, I can do absolutely no impressions, so I'm just going to laugh at the two of you, as usual.
So I once, this is a tangent, I once, after having done a comedy gig, a guy came up to me and like introduced himself, and he's like, oh, I run one of the biggest comedy clubs in Manchester. And he started telling me about all the acts he'd taken through. So he's like, James Acaster and Sarah Millican and Jack Whitehall and all of these kind of like, basically every comedian who's on British TV at the minute, like Nish Kumar, whoever. He's like, he sold it as I built their career, of they're only a big deal because of me. You know, I put them on a bill. If they did well, I then was like instrumental in getting them better billing at Edinburgh and so on, and built their careers from there. And he was kind of introducing himself and bigging himself up to me, and then he said to me, like, I'd love to get your number and to talk to you. And he said, can you do impressions? And I said, I can do a bad Michael Caine. And he said, oh, can you do any others? And I said, no. And then he said, oh, okay, never mind, and walked off.
Did you not tell him about Bob Simmons?
I know, I thought about that. And it was around the period as well where I used to do quite a good Chris Robshaw, but I haven't done it in a long time, and it's now bad. And I did. That was the one that was in my head. I was like, I could say I can do current England rugby captain Chris Robshaw, and he'd say, "Great, can you do some satire going to the corner?" I'm like, that isn't relevant. It's 2014.
Can you segue from this humble brag back to the podcast?
It wasn't a humble brag. It was someone ignoring me because I'm not very good at something, which is basically all of my time in school. So, podcast. Right, we mentioned Romania being suddenly good on the try line.
Sure.
Argentina, however, I think some of their tactics when it came to finishing needed some work.
Yeah.
Because there's a few times they had very clear overlaps and they just ignored them. But my favourite is once we saw in a wide shot that they had like three men over if they went left, and they were like maybe around the 15-metre line. And if they went open side, they scored in the corner. It was easy enough. On the right-hand side, the only person there was Ronny Roncero, the loosehead prop, the 86-year-old loosehead prop, up against four Romanians. And of course, Fagaggio chucks the ball to Ronny Roncero. And just, you know, it's like it's the Justin Marshall or the Grant Nisbet in rugby chance. Like, give me a go. I've only got 5 metres. I can't do an impression of him either. so they chuck it
to...
Wait,
say that in Ronny Michael Caine's accent instead.
And I said, give me a go. I've only got 5 metres.
It's good. I like that.
they chuck it to Ronny Roncero, who tries to bowl over four people and gets the line. And it's like, I have seen people finish from that position, but those people were Jonah Lomu. Not a 30-plus-year-old Argentine prop.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In fairness, this goes back to like the Hernandez dummy stroke delayed pass thing, and I think a lot of the time they were just like, we didn't really train against this sort of defense. I'm just so overwhelmed by the options available to us.
Yeah.
The time we have to make them that it's somehow confusing.
Yeah, usually when you run at a tackle bag it slows you down, but
yeah. These ones are just letting us go.
And also in fairness, they were probably a bit like, it's clear we're going to win this game, so fuck it. Let's give the ancient prop a go. Let's just see if he can. Why not? We're just sharing the love.
I mean, so it takes them 5 minutes, literally the first time they get into the 22. Santi Fernandez just walks straight through a massive gap and scores himself.
Yeah.
And it is, as I say, first time they get into 22, and they do it from like phase play, just working their way up, and then Fernandez just goes, oh, I might as well score then. You know, as you were saying earlier, like he's genuinely looking to give the pass, and he notices like, oh wait, no, I've got, it's actually somehow the hole in the defence is wider than the pitch, and just goes through and scores.
He does just sort of walk it in as well. He's just like, oh, all right then.
Yeah.
Cool.
And they then take the restart, they then work it downfield and score immediately. It takes them about 2 minutes from the restart to having scored another try.
Yeah, and then there were 3 points in that first half where I made an involuntary noise. One of them was the Rodriguez pass.
Mm.
Two of them were Amorosino related.
Yes.
I think I made 17 that were all Amorosino related.
Yeah. The first of which was the one where he makes a bit of a break and offload to Leguizamon, and then the pass sort of like goes astray until eventually they find Amorosino again in the back line, who then steps his man and scores. And it's just, it's such a graceful step, and it's just,
he's just so beautiful to look at.
I think it's an earlier moment, I think, where he gets the ball. It's one of the first times he gets the ball, I think, and he just looks up, and you can sort of imagine, like, him just going, oh, wow, okay, then, this is, like, cool. And just there's this beautiful step, and sort of arc, and you're just like, oh my God, how much fun must you have had in this game? Like, in a really important, in a World Cup where you're all like really out to prove yourselves after the last one, and there's in theory loads of pressure, and you're all just like, we're having a fucking great time.
Yeah.
And he was just like the complete personification of that. Like every time he got the ball, he just did something really lovely to watch and basically exactly the right thing and just really fun. Like, yeah. So, all three. Was
absolutely.
His sheer balance,
it's insane,
I think,
isn't it? Yeah.
It's the fact that his center of gravity or his core doesn't move while his feet are doing insane things.
Yeah.
So he remains completely balanced no matter how far he's stepping, no matter what he's doing. It's so good to watch.
He's pretty tall and rangy.
I think I would make room for him in my fantasy team as another fullback.
Yeah.
Basically just this one game, like nothing else.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's your team, you can pick a 16th man. You know?
Yeah. Or he can play like tight head. It's fine. I just want him. It doesn't really matter where.
Yeah.
And it is my main memory of this game is just not knowing who he was before. You know, yeah. I'd seen him play a couple of times for Tigers, but I didn't know him.
Mm.
And then going like, this guy's my new favourite player. I love him. Yeah. That step he'd do where he would just hurtle himself towards the first defender from fullback and then just like somehow explode off one foot, but not in like a Shane Williams or Cheslin Kolbe way.
Yeah.
Just in this like really subtle way, it was like the most quietest explosion.
Much silkier sort of way. My notes basically say, Amorosino, all in caps, three love hearts. That's the ultimate love heart rating. Steve only gets one. glorious runner, comma, monk hair. Question mark?
Yeah.
I also really liked the contrast between how beautiful his footwork was and how fucking terrible that haircut was.
And it kind of only got worse. That was pretty much the best haircut of his career.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, it was like a sort of Samson trade-off. Like, in order to be that good, he had to have really terrible hair.
Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah. He's a good-looking bloke, but...
Never worked it out.
Maybe Steve Walsh had a
I can't relate to. And absolutely. And I also, the other Argentine player that really stood out for me, that both stood out at the time and now, is Santiago Fernandez at fly half.
Yeah.
Again, I'd known as a solid 12. But I really liked the way he worked as a fly half.
Just time on the ball.
I really liked, exactly. And a lot of it is that, is just the time the Romanian defence was giving him. But true. The fact that his whole thing was he would select really good passes.
Yeah.
And there was absolutely no ego about how he played.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, there is a thing of like, one, obviously you cannot only play what's in front of you, but
yeah,
in that kind of pool game, you see teams all the time pick a non-10 at 10.
Yeah.
Trying to rotate the squad. Like New Zealand did it in the last World Cup where they had Jordy Barrett at 10 against
yeah.
them, I think.
Yeah.
He did not look as good at 10.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, if you compare him to that kind of player, the sort of random backline players who get thrown in at 10 against a sort of an easier team.
Yeah.
He was like really, really good. Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. Like very unselfish. Like kind of what you'd expect from a good modern 12, actually.
Yeah.
Very unselfish.
Yeah. I think that kind of as well, like a modern 10. We're talking previous episode about Katie Daly McLean and the way that she's just kind of like a matador for the players around her. And I feel like Fernandez did that really well in this game.
Absolutely. Like it is the image of what a 10 is these days.
Yeah.
Of just someone that brings runners onto the ball as much as anything.
Did he even kick the ball, Fernandez?
I was thinking that. I think maybe once.
He did.
Yeah.
Though he gave a lot. Amorosino took on a lot of kicking. Yeah, and Marcelo Bosch as well, who just has a foot like a traction engine. So it's worth mentioning actually the kicking since you bring it up.
Sure.
So, our friend, Martin Rodriguez Gorochaga.
Yeah.
So, a few minutes into the game, before they even score that first try, Argentina get a penalty pretty much between the posts. You know, about maybe 30 metres out, you know, outside the 22, but still very, very gettable.
Yeah.
And they give it to Martin Rodriguez, who, lest I remind you, last game missed 6 shots at goal. And they flash up his stats. And it's 29% his kicking rate for the tournament.
Jesus Christ.
Which I had to note down because he then
slowly James
decreased it further, by missing between the posts. He just skewers it completely. And thankfully, I don't know why no one in the week between their games, no one in the Argentina camp went, let's not do that again. He just missed 6 of them. And I know, as Sam put it, like he was kicking some of them from Saturn, but still, it was. He was outright terrible.
She should not be given that job.
No. So then they come to the first conversion and they give it to Fernandez. And it's like they instantly, for some reason, they didn't learn their lesson in the week between games, but they learned it in the 2 minutes between him missing that penalty and then taking that conversion.
Maybe it was one of those things where like they had learned it, but they just sort of forgot in the heat of the game. So they were like, okay, you're ball. And they're like, shit, what have we done?
Do you think it was like a football free kick routine
where like Fernandez was lining up, then Rodriguez just comes from miles away and just boots it over?
No, so that happened. So that happened at one point.
What?
So, yes, thank you for bringing this up. So we mentioned again our old friend Iulian Dumitras,
yeah,
who is the Romanian fullback who has, again, like I talk a foot like a traction engine. He has a foot like a factory entirely pumping out traction engines that are then glued together. Like he had one of the biggest, that doesn't work as a metaphor, I realize that.
No.
He had one of the absolute biggest boots I've ever seen.
He's generated like, traction engines.
He's the kind of kid who, like, when they were all in, like, big goal kick academy, he was probably bullying Franz Steen and Bosch as not having very big boots. He was kind of, like, tapping Rhys Hodge on the shoulder and then hiding around the other side and saying, like, no, your boot isn't big enough. You can't do this, Buffelli. Shut up.
He was giving both goal posts.
He was sitting inside class when they were learning about what boots to wear or whatever, and he was just smashing them through the windows and knocking other players' balls off course.
With his size 49s on.
Yeah. But at one point, the Romanian scrum half, Sergi, goes to pass the ball into a pod of forwards, and Dumitras sprints in, intercepts it from his own man, and just hoofs the ball downfield. He just clearly spots some space and he isn't calling out the back. He isn't overriding the call. He just sprints in, intercepts a pass to his own player and just thumps the ball into the opposition 22. And it isn't like he puts it out for 5 metres. He just kicks it and it lands in the 22 and kind of bounces around a bit. It was possibly my favourite moment of the game.
And watch this game for that moment.
Yeah.
Sounds incredible. I can't believe I missed this.
Yeah, I don't think I saw that.
Because it's sort of... What were you doing? It's sort of, you could have watched Dogtooth by Yorgos Lanthimos. It looks like, because of the way the camera pans to it, you don't quite see him sprinting in properly. And so I had to rewind and look at it again. I was like, no, he has. He's ran in and intercepted it. And especially because the forwards have got their hands out in like, I'm going to catch this ball and barrel it up. But no, there's no waiting for Iulian Dumitras.
Intercepting your own player is like, that's a sort of Steve Walsh level play, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Inspired by the referee.
Steve can do what he wants.
Yeah. Have we got anything else? Any other business?
No, I can cover the rest of it.
This has felt like the longest episode we've ever done, and yet it has not been.
Can I just make a quick comment on the on the pundit panel?
Yes, please do.
A little bit related to the last time. One, Alfie's shirt was like he'd seen Danny Care's appearance and gone, let me show you how it's done, lad. Beautiful. And two, this is only if you're watching the ITV version, Tom Evans looks like a hostage every time he's asked to talk.
Yeah.
And I don't know if... And he sounds like a hostage. I don't know if... Because at first I was like, maybe he just doesn't kind of understand where to look at the camera. Like, if you're not used to it, it's quite confusing to be like, oh, I'm supposed to look in this direction, not that. But he's never quite looking in the right place, and his voice is just always completely monotonous, like he's reading out a placard.
Tom Evans as a pundit looks like he's on the Eric Andre show. Like, he looks like they're making him deliberately uncomfortable, but they're not. They're just asking him, did you think the Argentine fullback had a good game?
Yeah, they weren't hard questions either.
Yeah.
What do Argentina have to do here? They have to win. The opposite of Francois Pienaar. It's just no.
Yes.
There was kind of a look of like, was that the correct answer? Afterwards.
Yeah. It was like, you seem like a pretty smart guy, Tom. You've played the game. Like... I think you have some insight into what's happening here. I don't know why you're so nervous about it.
I wonder if it ties to something Blaine Scully was saying back when we were chatting to him, our best friend.
Yeah. By the way, we spoke to Blaine
about
Scully.
Yeah, I don't know if you realised that, Rhiannon. Yeah. But he mentioned about just the lack of feedback in outside life, that as an athlete, you're told constantly about everything you do, whether it's good or bad, how you can improve it. You're given constant work-ons. I don't know if Tom Evans was just expecting that. He was expecting Andy Robinson to stand on the sideline and shout at him. Just him to provide more insight. Provide more goddamn insight.
Maybe Andy Robinson was on the sideline with placards and Tom Evans was trying to read the placards while it all went so wrong.
That's it.
After they'd finished the broadcast, he just kind of went like, okay, where do I go for the sort of post-broadcast analysis session then?
Check how I did. Yeah.
And Alf is like, mate, we're going to the pub. I just wanted to follow up on that after my last podcast comments from Danica and Fans Pino.
Thank you.
This game's observation.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. The one other thing I want to pick up on, Juan Manuel Leguizamon's try. So it comes from the pass we mentioned, the brilliant / accidental pass by Martin Rodriguez. So Leguizamon then goes straight through, and he has in front of him, a bit like Lionel Nally in the last game that Steve Walsh refereed, that you were on for. So he has an entire open field in front of him, and he has just the one Romanian fullback in front of him. And he can go left, he can go right, he can go in a straight line, and he will score unopposed. Instead, he arcs ever so slightly to his left and barrels right into the Argentine fullback and drops a shoulder into his face, which I love. That's how a forward finishes a try.
You might have been the one Argentinian player who was like, no, I fucking know what I'm doing. I'm smashing the other guy's defense.
Yeah.
None of this exploiting the gap bullshit for me.
Also,
yeah, it was a glorious moment.
Should we just quickly touch on Kazan's try as well?
We haven't talked about it. Yes. It's a brilliant try.
Really good try.
Loved it. And it was timely for them as well, just for half time. That, like, just when they sort of needed something to sort of chew on at half time. And they came up with that. It was a brilliant try. It was a rubbish pass from Christian Petra, but it worked out. He timed it well enough, so.
And I think that is when we were saying they get better in the second half. That thing about scoring before half time is just really, really important in terms of, like, momentum gets overrated, but it does matter kind of who scores or who, like, doesn't concede just before half time. And I think that really helped them, like, come out in the second half. Because they were, like, I wrote this down, still like 71 minutes in when the game was, like, long, long gone, Romania was still trying. They were still, like, refusing to kind of give in a way that's not, like, just sort of pride, I think, like.
Yeah.
And that try, because it was such a good try as well, I think it really helped them to sort of keep that, like, no, we're not, you know, we're not just going to roll over here. We are going to sort of play our part in this game. And look, we've remembered what tackling is.
Yeah.
And it's worth saying as well that Romania basically had no possession in this game. Like, they had a really hard time getting out of their 22. Like, and say that basically the first time they had any opportunity they scored is, you know, pretty good. So fair play to them.
Yeah. Possession was 71-30 to Argentina, but territory was 74-26.
71-30?
Like, yeah, 71-29, sorry.
You're maths there. Can you do my taxes, please?
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that. That is a bad idea. But do you know who can do your taxes? Michael Caine, because I played an accountant. Anyway. So there's no way you're winning a game with that kind of...
Of
territory and possession.
Slightly better than I thought. I was kind of thinking it was like closer to 80-20.
But I guess Romania kind of had two passages where they were in the 22.
Yeah.
And they just held on to it for quite a long time.
Yeah, they had some really unusable ball in the 22 as well, which they just kind of kept for a couple of phases longer than they should have before kicking it away. So,
yes. There is a moment as well, really early on, where when Romania get the penalty, where they're given a penalty on the Argentine try line and they opt for goal. I think the score is 7-0 at this point,
nil,
or 14-0. 14-0, okay. Of course, because the two tries are right next to each other. So, yeah, and they're on the try line, and it kind of feels a bit like when they opt to go for goal, it's a flex of, like, we can kick penalties, mate. Like, look at us. Like, they've just seen Rodriguez miss his 18th kick of the tournament, and they go, well, this game's kind of beyond us by now, but we can rub this in. we can really show off here.
Yeah.
There was an interesting thing about this game, actually, that reminds me of, which I think I sort of mentioned to you offline, that there's this sense at the start that it's not, in a nice way, I guess, but there's this sense in the start that this is going to be like a real contest.
Yeah.
That Argentina aren't going to walk it. And
yeah.
And further, that you know, like, because I didn't watch this World Cup as intensely as the two of you, but I vaguely remember, like, oh, Scotland are going to get kind of screwed in this pool because, you know, Argentina came third last time. They've got a point to prove. I know there's been some turnover, but, like, Scotland have been crap for the last 4 years. And there was definitely a real sense from the pundit team that that's not what they thought, that they kind of saw Scotland as the ones who sort of had the right to be second and Argentina who had to take it, and that this was going to be a difficult game for them.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like Argentina knew that and were like, excuse us, like, I'm sorry, but we have a very different narrative here. Let's show you how it goes, because it was just such a, everything about that game was such a like comprehensive overturn of what the pundits sort of set up for it. You know, that it was going to be this arm wrestle, that it was going to be difficult, that it was going to be quite an ugly game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just glorious and comprehensive. And Romania's contribution, actually, in attack at least, when they had it, was, you know, was a really lovely moment. I thought that was really interesting. It was kind of the inverse in some ways of that really lazy World Cup narrative that you just assume the bigger team is going to beat the smaller team. Argentina just weren't a bigger team really then, even though they had that amazing World Cup in 2007. So they sort of accidentally almost like gave Romania a bit more credit and then got it completely wrong anyway. There was a really interesting aspect to that, I thought.
And I think so much of that Argentine, people were ignoring how good Argentina were at this World Cup, I think.
It was a great selection of players.
And we'd seen them come and, you know, they'd lost the previous autumn to England, Wales and Ireland, but they'd really pushed all of them. They'd kept them all within a score.
Yeah.
And I know it's like it was a particularly bad, like, you look at that England team, it was the England team with Hugo Monge at fullback and so on, where he famously had that. Yep, that was the reaction. That's the reaction to Hugo Monge at fullback, that kind of snorting and laughing.
Yeah, for the benefit of the listeners, Rhiannon has just snorted her drink and her head is currently in her hands laughing at the concept of Hugo Monge playing fullback.
Bless Hugo Monge, but I think he'd admit that that was not his best day. He had a proper night. It's just on YouTube. There's just a compilation of, it's just called something like Hugo Monge nightmare at fullback against Argentina, and it's worth looking at if you fancy a laugh.
Robbie sent me this exact link and it is genuinely hysterical.
It's every possible mistake you could ever expect a fullback to make being made.
Hugo Monge, but he was making Uge look it was a proper nightmare.
Long live real fullbacks, eh?
Absolutely. That's the value in just like a Dan Evans or a George Furbank or whoever. Just a really boring, normal fullback.
Yeah, should have picked Simon Hammersley, aged like 17 or whatever it would have been.
Absolutely, yeah. He should have been playing. But yeah, so this Argentine team was good and they'd narrowly lost to all those sides and they kind of had that issue if they didn't have regular rugby, you know, competition. They were coming together from clubs all over. And actually, you should have gone, well, this is a really good team, as that they prepared really well for the last World Cup and they performed really well. And, you know, they have an incredibly strong 15 and they're going to have time to train together and they don't have the Jaguares thing of just being exhausted from being jet lagged constantly. So
it was like they kind of hadn't really recognised that the difference in that a World Cup training camp is to autumn internationals. Which now I think is much, people get much more that you will massively kind of outplay the standards you've set for yourself throughout the cycle.
Yeah.
Because of that time, but it didn't really seem to have dawned on people that that would be the case here. Possibly also because that previous game was so bad against England, but
yes, they should have won that game as well.
And I remember like when I watched, because I watched the game twice, I was pretty tired the first time. My notes from the first one are basically just Steve Walsh is great, Amorosina is great. Perfectly valid.
That's pretty much the entire thing.
I was like, why is everyone talking about Argentina like they're shit and Scotland like they're good? Because this is absolutely not my memory of the situation. Like, I don't even think it's hindsight. Like, and I went back and looked it up and I was like, yeah, Scotland finished fifth in every Six Nations of that like World Cup cycle.
Mm.
And it was just, yeah, it was just a really odd thing that basically because we weren't seeing Argentina play regularly, everyone kind of forgot that they were good. Because they'd only just like a week before or something been admitted into the Olympic Championship. Yeah.
And because they mentioned on commentary that proposal they had about a year or so beforehand, in which they were talking about putting them in the Six Nations and having them based in Barcelona.
Yeah.
Which is insane as a thing to do.
Great,
yeah, that was never going to work. And
lived off completely batshit ideas that were bizarre and thankfully dismissed.
It's, and of course, no one would ever repeat that when another tier two nation established themselves really well at World Cup and everyone just tries to shoehorn them into a competition where they wouldn't work. What's that wouldn't
it'd never happen again.
That would definitely not happen. No, oh, no, I couldn't make it work. In my head, there was going to be a Nippon pun, but I couldn't get it to work.
No, the point has been made, though. So
yeah,
sure,
yeah. Okay, have we got any of business, or should we move on to the customary man of the match and Martin Rodriguez award?
Let's move on, I reckon.
I actually remembered this time, so yeah,
let's
move on. Yeah,
nice,
fantastic. So, should we start with Dick of the Day?
Can do.
Yeah.
Well, am I
Yeah, go.
Yeah. Go who?
Oh, okay, I'll do it, fine. I thought everyone had volunteered, and I went, okay, fine, let's do this. Okay, my dick of the day is the one and only Martin Goddamn Rodriguez Gurruchaga. There's two G's in his name. One for missing a shot between the posts when his kicking percentage was already 29%, and clearly his team had gone, No, Martin, you can't do this. We're not doing this again. We're not going to have you miss 30 shots at goal over the World Cup. We're not going to let this happen, and yet. And then for moments later, having just missed that shot, he then blows a clear overlap that would have been a try for Oguja. He throws an interception pass. His one really good bit of play was a fluke. And I say my outstanding dick of the day is Martin Rodriguez.
Fair enough. Makes sense. Rhiannon?
So initially I thought I was going to give it to Fogajo for the drop that ruined that, like what would otherwise have been just the most perfect.
Oh yeah.
At the end of the first half.
I'm going to come on to this.
But this is maybe a bit niche and it's because it was like so late in the game that it really saved me. But the replacement Romanian scrum half, right at the end, it was like the clock had gone red, Argentina were still sort of relentlessly attacking the Romanian line and they were doing that thing of knowing how to defend on the try line. and someone, I've forgotten now, but I think it might have been the eight, gets the ball, turns it over, like holds on just long enough for the nine to come up and kick it into touch and he misses.
Yeah.
Argentina just get the ball back and run at them again. And I was like, they must be so fucking tired.
The worst thing about that is they eventually get the ball back. And when they decide, okay, let's just actually kick it out this time, they bring in Dimitrash to do it instead. So they just get rid of they bin off the scrum half and just say, right, you've got a massive boot. Just get it into touch. We rely on you. Get us all in for an early shower.
And he does competently.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just such a, like, you fucking dickhead moment. Like, it wasn't that far to kick it to touch, you know? I get that there was a lot of pressure, but it really didn't feel, in the scheme of things, like a difficult kick to make.
No.
And it must have just been so devastating for all his teammates. So he's my dick of the day.
On dick of the day contenders, the replacement scrum halves, because I had another contender I forgot to mention. The replacement Argentine 9, Alfredo Lalanne, who had completely... I had no memory of him whatsoever. He sounds like an extra in The Godfather. And he, at one point, Romania stabbed for a kick towards the end of the game into touch. And it kind of bounced a few times, then bounces out. And he does that thing that used to happen at the time. You know, when you catch the ball and you put a foot into touch and the foot in. And he takes it like that on the final bounce and points back. So it should be a kick where it was kicked from. And it was a grubber kick.
Nomination, that.
Like, it bounced about five times first. But he thinks he's got a far enough understanding of the laws to play this 4D chess that, oh, because I caught it and I've got my foot in touch, it's going to be back. But it bounced four times. What are you doing, Alfredo?
And I respected it. I thought he was just hoping that Steve Walsh had been like, brushing his hair and hadn't noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I hadn't noticed. I thought, oh, that's quite clever, you know, they've got themselves to throw into the line out. I hadn't clocked that he pointed back. That's a very good nomination for Nick of the Day, not knowing the laws. Yeah, yeah. I've gone with Nicolas Fagaggio. So I'll elaborate on what you were saying a minute ago, Rhiannon, that basically he sets up this move with Leguizamon where he is basically your simple nine loop. So he gives it to the player, gets it back, and then hits it to somebody out the back, probably 10. But he picks the ball up, takes forever over it, passes it forward to Leguizamon, gets it back on the loop and drops it. So in two ways, he has a handling error. There is another moment with Fagaggio, and he
my other thing, just on that before you move on, is that Steve Walsh lets the forward pass go.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
And he's just like, I don't care. Look, he looks nice. Yeah. And then he kind of goes, like reluctantly, I've got to blow for this one, haven't I?
Yeah.
Too far now.
Yeah.
I had another moment, and Fagaggio is very much not the dick at this moment. But Argentina were, it was just before Juan Fagaggio scored. Argentina have it on the left-hand side of the field, about 5 yards out from the Romanian try line. And there's a point where they have like a pot of forward set up, and I see somebody running a really good line from miles away. They've come out of shot, run miles into the ready to run into the Romanian pack. And I think, why is Fagaggio not past that guy? You know, he's got a pretty good chance of scoring. And then I realised that guy was a seagull.
Am I drunk?
Were you drunk?
I mean, you're saying that we were tired when we watched this game at 3 a.m. in 2011.
Yes.
And I think I'm okay, but I just had a moment where I just saw something white fly in. Thought it must be an Argentine player. That seagull ran a really good line.
Blue a really good line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Fagaggio should have passed it, you know, be inclusive. So Fagaggio, mainly for the ball drop / forward pass thing, but also, I mean, bit of a dick move not passing to that seagull.
Sure.
I think that's a pretty solid nomination, and it's quite difficult to watch.
There was something about Fagaggio, though, in that he came up with this just absolutely ingenious strategy that constantly caught Romania off guard, which was to, from the base, pick the ball up and run two steps backwards.
Yeah.
And he did it at basically every breakdown. Yeah, and Romania wouldn't do anything in reaction. Yeah. Like, Romania would then just give him all the time in the world to select a pass, do whatever he liked, make a break, put someone in space. They just kind of, and every now and again, one of the Romanian forwards would just go like, hold on, he's done it again. Should we just hit him?
Take the ball off him, yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine if line speed was existing.
Yeah. It was ingenious. It worked basically every time. Good on him.
Yeah.
Okay, should we move on to Man of the Match? I'll go first. It's fine. Sure. There were two contenders, really, I thought. I didn't think anyone from the Romanian team stood out.
Me neither.
I think there were some good players in there. Kazan, I think the winger who scored, was the only one I thought had
he did his best, didn't he?
Good game.
Yeah.
Tinku for, like, committing. But...
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I thought Leguizamon and Lobbe had good games. I was reminded of just how good Patricio Albacete was as well in the second row. I'd kind of forgotten how well-rounded he was because towards the end of his career, he was a great line-out option and a good kind of grunty forward. And he was really well-rounded and was offloading and clearly having the time of his life. So that was great. But really, the two contenders are Santi Fernandez, who I thought was great, but the man of the match for me is Lucas Gonzalez Amorosino.
Yeah.
I thought there were two contenders. What I thought was Leguizamon. I think he was everywhere.
Mm.
But again, I just can't ignore how good Amorosino was. Like, every time they kicked, there was a danger there. And every time he joined the line, he was basically making breaks at will. Like, he was insane.
There was a point where I was, like, trying to be more interesting because I figured you would both pick him. And I was like, maybe I could give it to... No, I'm not even... No. I know Lobe exists. And, yeah, he was really great. And the Guizamon was great. But I don't know how you could watch that game and not just love Amorosino and not really give him all the trophies.
This is the first time on the podcast that it's been a unanimous freeway pick. Wow. So there's been times it's been two people, this is the first time a player has got three Man of the Match nominations or three Dick of the Day nominations. Though Rodriguez came very close. Yeah, he's now up to three, including two for myself. I really want to nominate for Dick of the Day from every single match during the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like a standing one, like Steve Walsh's standing Man of the Match.
That's yes.
That's true.
Steve Walsh is standing Man of the Match and Dick of the Day.
Yes, obviously. He's like, everything. All the awards.
Steve Walsh is literally everything. I have realised, I don't think we introduced at the beginning, Rhiannon. I don't think actually we introduced any of us at the beginning.
No, Rhiannon introduced us.
I introduced us.
Yeah. I don't know what happened at the beginning. I don't recall any of it. I don't recall any of that past life.
Are you drunk?
I think you were recalling past lives. You know, that made me black out.
I'm very sorry.
Do you want to end at the end before we all say goodbye?
Yeah, so where can people find you? Where can people find you on the social medias and the stuff and the things?
Now I feel bad that there's really only one. Like, I'm just on Twitter. If you find me anywhere else, please leave me alone. I'm at Regarth Jones on Twitter. No one else really has my name. It's not that hard to find me. If you want to see my very occasional tweets, trying to add nuance to things and then running away really quickly so that people don't talk to me. Sometimes I write articles and posts as well.
That's it. So there's also your stuff on Rugby Pass, which is very good.
Good, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you could go to Rugby Pass and find me. That's, yeah. And then you can just read stuff and leave me alone. That would be great.
Fantastic. Okay. And William Rees-Owen, have you got anything else to say?
I've not really got anything to plug. Oh, I've got one thing to plug. Listen to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective podcast. It's available.
Right, I thought they changed that to the Rhiannon Garth Jones Squidge
Rugby
World Cup Retrospective.
Yeah. Yeah,
the technical work from.
My Twitter is at will_owen9.
No one cares.
If you want updates on when the podcast's going to go out, then I will sometimes tweet that and sometimes tweet hot musical takes. Okay,
no one cares.
I follow Will on Twitter, and I feel like he doesn't come on very often, but when he does, it's quite funny.
Thank you.
I mean, that's certainly a take. That's certainly a thing you could say about his
endorsement for following you.
Yeah. And I like how that's the first time I've had to plug anything on the podcast because I know this is going to be my final appearance.
Yes.
Before we start our own podcast.
Yeah. Next week we replace you with Shakira.
Yeah.
And I also need to say goodbye to Michael Kine, who... Hold on. It's old man, Michael Kine now.
Michael Kine.
Hey, how are you? I won't... Now, Master Bruce, I need to say to
my
you...
My name's Ernie.
...that... I'm sorry, Master Brooks. I apologise for my lack of... I've lost it. That wasn't very good, was it? I was going slightly more ambitious and going for like the old Michael Caine, like as I said, like Alfred Batman, Michael Caine. It wasn't very good. Like the Fredologic, just threading this podcast together.
Again, for the benefit of the listener, for that entire exchange that we just had, Rhiannon's facial expression did not change once.
I've got a really good
game. So unimpressed.
If listeners, throughout the duration of this podcast, you feel like you are slowly going round the bend, just know that you are not alone.
I will
reply on Twitter to let you know that. If you feel compelled to
I feel like I haven't just gone around the bend, I've gone around every single Radiohead album. I feel like I'm still working my way through them. Do we want to leave this? Do we want to call this here? Do you want to get rid of this?
Sure. We'll talk about our Radiohead album rankings next episode.
Let's not. Okay,
in computer,
will you stop the... Stop.
Bye!
Yeah.
Right, okay, I've had enough of this. Yeah. Oh, maybe I haven't. I can't even tell anymore. I don't know what's going up, what's down, what is Argentina, and what is Romania. Thank you very much for joining us.
Uruguay.
Oh, thank you, yeah. Next time, we have South Africa beating Fiji in a rugby match. Hopefully, we should have a guest... on that as well. Yep. We've said he said he'll do it. We haven't arranged a time or anything, so fingers crossed he can do it. It's all going to be great. After that, it's Australia v Ireland, which is actually going to be a good game, and we have a good guest lined up, so that's going to be great. Anyway, we've had a really good guest today. Thank you very much, Will Owen, and no, Rhiannon. And I hope you are well, and I hope next time I can remember what words are And I can say cheerio from my mortal kind.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was an experience.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.